All across America and around the world, this is Veterans Radio.
This is Veterans Radio.
And now, your host for today's program, Dale Thronberry.
And good afternoon and welcome to Veterans Radio. My name is Dale Thronberry and I have the privilege of being your host today on Veterans Radio. I was a CW-2 pilot, helicopter pilot in Vietnam in 1969 with the United States Army. I want to welcome you to our program today. We've got a couple of changes that we have to make. Unfortunately, one of our guests will not be able to be here today, and that is Dr. Boyd Cooper. He's a World War II veteran we were hoping to talk to, but unfortunately he was hospitalized for something the other day and will not be able to be here, so we're hoping that everything will turn out all right for Dr. Cooper, and he'll be on the program at a future date, which is kind of making me realize that I should be recording these interviews as off the air as much as on the air. So we want to make sure that Dr. Cooper recovers fully, so our prayers and are out there for him. He's out in California, and we're hoping that he will feel better. I should plug his book a little bit. His book is called Unlikely Hero, and it is on Amazon, and you can go check it out. He was a mechanic during World War II, an aviator type person, and you're not going to get to hear his story today. But we do have our guest will be coming up in just a minute, and that is Doug Sterner, and Doug is responsible for a couple of websites, but the one we're going to be talking around today is the Home of Heroes, and it's got just about everybody who's ever, you know, received a medal or a high-ranking medal in the military since the Civil War, and I think that you'll really enjoy listening to Doug talk. I want to thank our sponsors for sure on our program today. I want to make sure that we would do that, and that is Legal Help for Veterans, Fighting for Veterans' Rights. You know that Legal Help is usually on our last program of every month with one of their experts on veterans' disabilities. So if you want to ask a question or you have more interest in finding out what Legal Help for Veterans can do for you, give them a call at 800-693-4800. It's 800-693-4800. Also, U.S. Wings. We've been giving away quite a few of the incredible, the finest in leather flight jackets and other military apparel. That's from U.S. Wings, also on our last program of every month. So make sure you follow Veterans Radio on our website, veteransradio.net, or you can follow us on Facebook, and we usually announce what the question of the month is going to be. And I think this month we're going to be asking, what was your military specialist or specialty while you were in the service? So, I don't think it's up there yet, but it will be in about a week. So look out for that question. So you get the opportunity to win another one of these U.S. Wings jackets, which are just, as I said, the finest in leather flight jackets available out there. Their number, if you want to find out more information, is 800-650-0659. You can also go to their website, which is uswings.com. And we want to thank Sergeant Hack for supporting Veterans Radio in the way that he does, and especially for providing those jackets. They're awesome, I guess you could say. We also want to thank three local veterans organizations in our local area who have been supporting Veterans Radio over the years. Number one is the Charles S. Kettles VVA Post 310. That's Vietnam Veterans of America Post 310 in Ann Arbor. VFW Post 423, also in Ann Arbor. And American Legion Post 46, also from Ann Arbor. We can't do it without you guys, men and women, and we greatly appreciate your support. I got an interesting email this morning, and I want to relate this story to you because I found it fascinating. Let me just read part of it. It says, 5 years ago, I happened to visit a house that was for sale. Until I entered, I did not know that it was a World War II veteran's home. As I toured the home, I made my way up a narrow, steep flight of stairs, and entering a small, sloped-ceiling bedroom, I was struck by all the thoughtfully placed memorabilia from wars as a World War II veterans. Through a small window in the room, I heard fabric snapping and fluttering, and the sound drew me to look outside. So as I did, I came eye to eye with a large American flag waving at the top of a tall pole. I lingered in that room, looking at the old photos and cherished items, wondering what this veteran had gone through. feeling a heartfelt connection to the life of a man I would never meet. As my husband and I pulled away from the house, I noticed a small wooden board nailed proudly to the front of the 1920 old farmhouse. The words carved on it read, "Home, sweet home." I was touched by the whole experience in a way that kept gnawing at me long after returning to my own house. So much so that I sat down the next morning and penned a poetry, which I will attempt to read to you in just a minute. Being that words are her expression, because this is what she does. So she came up with the lyrics to a song entitled Home Sweet Home. She worked with many talented musicians, and they recorded this particular song, and she just put it aside. So what's fascinating about this to me is that this woman, her name is Anna O'Brien. Anna O'Brien is a Korean orphan that came to America about 60 years ago. Thanks to a bunch of American soldiers, she flew home on a Flying Tiger airplane when she was about 3 months old. This story just really grabbed my heart here. It says, "Long ago, I was an orphan baby from Seoul who was brought to this country by the loving, generous hearts of my American parents. And by the grace of God and a handful of soldiers who wanted to get home, agreed to change a few diapers of the 101 orphans that were lined up in shoeboxes along the wall of a Flying Tiger airplane. Among the many families waiting for the plane that landed in Portland, Oregon, was my new and forever mother from Midland, Michigan, Madeline Ridenour." This is a great story. I just was fascinated by this. And so I talked with Anna this morning, and right now she's a little bit nervous. So she says, "Who are you calling me back right away?" And so I said, "I think I need to talk to you about this story." And so she says, "No, not yet." So she decided not to come on the program today. But we are in communication, and I will get her on here at some point. But I just wanted to read a couple of these lyrics to you, and then I wanted to play the song for you. What Anna is looking for is a veteran, especially, is someone to record this song professionally. And I think that we have listeners out there, I know, that are very talented men and women singers. And I just thought of another one. Anna, remind me later, Kelly Trudell out in Trudell, out in Jackson, Michigan. She would love this. But so let me read the lyrics that go along with it. It says, "These old pines forest slope seem to have lost my get up and go. I'm well in the downhill side now and going faster. Living on a spit of land, a 1920 farmhouse of lathe and plaster. Please disregard all those disrepairs outside, for inside still reigns a lord and master. Every morning I go out and raise the stars and stripes, saluting those brave souls who still haunt me at night. Some 50 years ago, we were just mere kids, fighting on foreign soil in a hell war, all for one together. The battle-weary lucky ones who made it out alive would come home, come back stateside, changed forever. Now that old flag waving out my window, I turn to see, is there keeping those heroes alive in my memory? Those never-to-be-forgotten soldiers who paid the highest price just to keep this spit of land I live on in me. Still free, still free, still free." So Anna, thank you very much for sending that to me, and hopefully we will help you find the person that can record this song. But I want to play it now for our audience, and I just sent a quick email. I don't remember the name of the guitarist in this, but it was a friend of Anna's who plays the guitar in this. So let's check it out and listen to it, and when we come back, maybe Anna will send me an email and I can give you the name. But listen to this. It's entitled Home Sweet Home.
This old pine lost slow, see me lost my get up and go. I'm well on the downhill side now, and going faster. Living on a spit of land, 1920 farmhouse, a lather master. Please disregard all the disrepairs outside. For inside still reigns a lord and master. Every morning I go out and raise the stars and stripes, salute those brave souls who still come here now. Some 50 years ago, we were just mere kids fighting on a foreign soil in a hell war, all for one together. A battle weary, lucky ones who made it out alive would come back stateside, change forever. To see, is there keeping those heroes alive in my memory? It's never forgotten soldiers who paid the highest price just to keep this bit of land I live on and me still free, still free, still free, still free. Those heroes of life in my memory. Those never to be forgotten soldiers who paid the highest price just to keep this bit of land I live on and me still free, still free, still free, still free. Yeah.
Recording and entitled Home Sweet Home, and it was by Anna O'Brien. And so we're looking for someone that would like to record that song professionally, because I think if you read the lyrics, and we'll put these lyrics up on our website after the program today so that you can see them and see, you can, maybe you can understand why it, I don't know, it just grabbed my heart and my mind when I was reading them. So that's Anna O'Brien, that's A-N-A O'Brien, Home Sweet Home. Thank you, Anna, very much for sharing that with us, and I'm looking forward to talking with you and hearing more about your music as we go along here on Veterans Radio. So we're going to take a quick break right now, and when we come back, we've got Doug Sterner on the line right now, and we're going to be talking about the Home of Heroes, a great website for those of you who want to find out more about men and women who have won the nation's highest honors. We'll be right back. You're listening to Veterans Radio. And we're back on Veterans Radio, and the music again is from Anna O'Brien, and I'm going to use that for bump music today if I can. So joining me on the line right now is a good friend of Veterans Radio. We've talked in the past, and now he's working with one of our partners at Legal Help for Veterans. So welcome, please, Doug Sterner. Doug, welcome back.
Hey, good to be on with you again, Dale.
It's a pleasure to talk to you again with you, sir. And I want to talk about this. Well, there's two halls that you've got going that you had. Number one was that, let's start with your military career. I'm a little bit disorganized today. I apologize for that. So tell me what you did while you were in the military, first of all.
Well, I was an old 12B-40. That's a combat engineer, which is probably why I've done what I've done. At least I credit the ethics installed in me by the Army engineers. because what I've attempted to do is something DOD says can't be done. And the motto of the combat engineers is SAONS, we will try. We never say it's impossible. We say, well, we'll at least try. And in the process of trying, sometimes we get some pretty good things done.
That's true. And this is a pretty good thing you've got going here. So you spent time in the military, and then you came back. And where do you live now?
I live in Pueblo, Colorado.
Okay. And I did read a little bit about your background and stuff. What motivated you to start this Hall of Heroes?
Well, back in 1993, my wife started running some programs here in Pueblo, Colorado. It was initially just something to provide a free day for the children of our city. We live in a city that's a hardworking city but has a lot of poor. And she tried to put together a program once a year with free carnival rides for all the kids in Pueblo, Colorado. She brought in buses so that they had free transportation. We had entertainment. They could go to the zoo and it didn't cost them anything. She did this the first time on July 4th of 1993, and it was a wonderful, wonderful event, but it lacked the patriotic emphasis that she wanted for the event. Mm-hmm. So when she did it the following year, we learned that Pueblo had a Medal of Honor recipient. We went to invite him to come to Pueblo, and lo and behold, we found out that Pueblo actually had 4 living recipients of the Medal of Honor. At that time, there were only 204 living recipients worldwide, and it was a distinction that only Pueblo could claim, ultimately leading in our city being named the Home of Heroes.
Okay, now I get it. All right, so you got your Medal of Honor there, but then what happened, what motivated you to start making this incredible library of heroes?
Well, from 93 until about 98, Pam continued to bring Medal of Honor recipients in, sometimes 15, 16 at a time for citywide activities. And so I started doing some research on them. If they're coming in, people needed to know who they were, what they did. And so I started researching them. At that time, in the early 90s, there wasn't a whole lot of information available. And providing materials to local journalists to detail who these men were that were coming into our city. Mm-hmm. In 98, a good friend of mine, Peter Lemon, a Medal of Honor recipient, started pestering me. He said, Doug, you know more about the Medal of Honor than anybody, and you're wasting your life as a real estate manager. You need to go start a museum. And that was the worst advice anybody in the world ever gave me, because I left a good paying job to spend the next 20 years working for almost nothing but history.
Well, we love dedicated people. We're talking with Doug Stern, who happens to be the founder of the Home of Heroes, which you can find on there. If you have any questions out there, please feel free to give us a call here on Veterans Radio. The number is 734-822-1600. All right, so you gave up, I can understand giving up a job and going after something that you love, but that doesn't pay you a whole lot of money. we've been doing that here at Veterans Radio for 15 years. So
I think you've had my friend Mr. Fike on over his Purple Heart program before.
Yes.
And when he first started out doing that, he called me one day and he said, Mr. Sterner, I know you've been doing your thing for decades now, and I want to start doing this. And he said, I wanted to reach out to you for your advice. And, of course, I'm speaking a little tongue-in-cheek here, but only a little.
Sure.
He said, what advice do you have for me? I said, Mr. Fike, do you have a wife and family? He said, I sure do. I said, then don't do it. Run the other way, because once you start something like this, it will consume your life, and so go the opposite direction. But fortunately for a lot of people who have seen their Purple Hearts recovered, Mr. Fike didn't take my advice.
Right. Yeah. Well, thankfully there are people like you and Fike and the rest of these people around the country that start up these, small nonprofit museums and so forth, and gather history and geological, right? Family histories and so forth that are out there. I mean, as you mentioned earlier on, the government doesn't do a great job of keeping all this information, at least making it available to the public.
Well, they don't do even a decent job. It's pathetic. When I started in 1998, there was a privately published book by Highland House that had the citations of most of the Medal of Honor recipients up to that time. Mm-hmm. It was at that time that I went back to community college, learned about computers, and started developing my website, homeofheroes.com, initially putting in citations and then pictures of the individual Medal of Honor recipients, because we had, for every living real Medal of Honor recipient out there in the public, we had five phonies that were claiming the Medal of Honor, and even... And there was no way to quickly verify or vet that, and it was tragic on two levels. Tragic in that we had more imposters than real heroes,
right.
And tragic in that there wasn't information on the real heroes out there so that we could understand what they did and connect with their lives.
It was there was that whole time period we went through there with the Stolen Valor movement, and I know that you were involved in that as well. And the idea of these people claiming to have, you know, they were saying that they won the reward. They didn't even know that they received them.
Yeah.
And, you know, getting away with stuff and making money off of it and so on and so forth. We just had a Medal of Honor recipient pass away here in our local Ann Arbor-Ypsilanti area, and that was Charles Kettles, who's...
Yeah, I picked up on that when you were mentioning your three local veterans organizations that one of them's named for him.
Yes, and unfortunately he just passed away last month. But, you know, he had to have his Distinguished Service Medal upgraded because they didn't think he had... Evidently, they didn't think it was a big enough deal what he had done back in 1967. But you mentioned earlier when you started this that there were approximately 200 Medal of Honor recipients alive. I think the number's down to 62.
I think it's a little bit more than that. Just a second, I'll give you an exact number.
Okay, I figured you'd be able to do that.
But we have lost some in droves, and it's a shame that we have so few left, you know, in so brief a time to have lost so many. There's only four living from World War II. We're down to four, you know, World War II living recipients. And then they're gone, and so we're losing them very quickly. Fortunately, we have a good crop of young Vietnam or War on Terrorism recipients. There's actually 72 total living recipients of the Medal of Honor at the present time.
Okay.
So the number is 72. That's four from World War II, and that's five from Korea, and, you know, so there's nine right there that are well up into their 80s and 90s, and so the numbers are going to drop tremendously. Fortunately, we have 13 in the War on Terrorism, and I know there's at least one more coming.
Mm-hmm. And it took a long time for them to get through the process. I know that they were talking, somebody was on our program talking about Medal of Honors and how I think they were being given out more frequently, I guess would be the term, for the Afghanistan conflict versus the Iraq conflict, and so suddenly now I guess it's going, catching up to what these men and women, you know, did there.
I don't know if it's catching up. There's still not a single living recipient from OIF, Operation Iraqi Freedom, so they don't have a single living recipient from that war. There is one coming, but the vast majority of them are indeed from service in Afghanistan.
Oh, brother, I mean, I just wanted to thank you for building this website, and you, I found it really interesting to look at some of these stories. I encourage our audience to go to homeofheroes.com. There's just about everything that you ever wanted to know about it, of not only the Medal of Honor, but the Distinguished Service Cross, Silver Stars, so on and so forth. Where did you get all this information from? That's a lot of work.
I've got a whole room down in my basement with about 500 3- and 4-inch binders stuffed with papers that are original records, probably the largest collection of military records outside of the National Personnel Record Center in St. Louis, and they're in College Park. So I've spent, you know, the last two decades digging the records. One thing I would mention, you mentioned, you know, my website, homeofheroes.com. It's no longer my own. And one thing I've learned over the years is if you hold something too tightly, you can kill it.
Right, yes.
And, you know, I'm no spring chicken anymore. I just turned 69 this year. And, you know, about 10 years ago, my work on my database, which is the other side of what I do, building a database of awards, I was just, you know, at the very bottom. I was going under and failing fast. Mm-hmm. And Military Times, it published Army Times, Navy Times, et cetera, came along. And they partnered with me. And that partnership gave me the opportunity to continue the work and made it better. And the same thing is true with the Home of Heroes website. Last year, Mr. Fassone, Jim Fassone, yeah, from Legal Help for Veterans, contacted me. And we arranged for him to take the website, and he now operates it. It's his website now, using my material, but it ensures that that information is going to be available to people long after I'm gone.
Well, you're not gone yet, but we're going to be right back. We're going to take a break for the news. When we get back, we're going to be talking more about the Home of Heroes and also your Hall of Valor with the Military Times. So you're listening to Veterans Radio. We'll be right back after the news. Today's Medal of Honor is brought to you by the VFW Post 423 in Ann Arbor, Michigan. VFW Post 423, we thank you for sponsoring our Medal of Honor segment.
The Medal of Honor is the highest award for valor in combat given a member of the Armed Forces of the United States. There have been over 3,400 recipients of the nation's highest award. This is one of them. Corporal Hiroshi Miyamura engaged Korean attackers in hand-to-hand combat. Details after this. Company H was occupying a defensive position when the enemy fanatically attacked, threatening to overrun the position. Miyamura, a machine gun squad leader, aware of the imminent danger to his men, jumped from his shelter, wielding his bayonet in close hand-to-hand combat, killing 10 of the enemy. Returning to his position, he administered first aid to the wounded and directed their evacuation. As another savage assault hit the line, he manned his machine gun and delivered withering fire until his ammunition was expended. He ordered the squad to withdraw while he stayed behind to render the gun inoperative. He then bayoneted his way through the infiltrated enemy soldiers to a second gun emplacement and assisted in its operation. When the intensity of the attack necessitated the withdrawal of the company, Miyamura ordered his men to fall back while he remained to cover their movement. He killed more than 50 of the enemy before his ammunition was depleted and he was severely wounded. He maintained his stand despite his painful wounds, continuing to repel the attack until his position was overrun. When last seen, he was fighting ferociously against an overwhelming number of enemy soldiers.
The Medal of Honor series is a production of Veterans Radio.
We're back on Veterans Radio, and we're talking with Doug Sterner, who founded a website called Home of Heroes many years ago that he recently relinquished to one of our partners here on Veterans Radio, and that's Jim Falsone over at Legal Help for Veterans. And I know that the woman who works on our website has been working on your website, and Tammy works very hard, very, very hard. I know, to keep the two old men know what's going on with, you know, with computers and so forth. But, yeah, she's been very effective. I am looking at it right now. It's just a beautiful site, and it makes so much sense to have it upgraded on a regular basis. It's so difficult with the technology that's out there to keep track of everything. But for our audience, we're going to go into a little informative speech here talking about these different awards. So can you kind of tell us...
Before we start that, can we talk about Home of Heroes for just a minute?
Because, sure, go ahead.
You know, in addition to having the citations of these individuals up there, you can go to the Home of Heroes website and you can look up Hiroshi Miyamura that we were just right, listening to the story about his Medal of Honor action, and read his citation, but you're old enough, like I am, to probably remember a fellow by the name of Paul Harvey.
I am.
And Paul Harvey used to have a segment that he did, and now you know the rest of the story.
Absolutely.
And I think you might want to think about Mr. Fasson's Home of Heroes website as being the rest of the story. So let me tell you what you didn't just hear about Hiroshi Miyamura, that if you go to Home of Heroes, you can read the story that Mr. Fasson has got posted there about Hiroshi. Hiroshi was an Isai, that's first-generation Japanese-American, that was raised in Gallup, New Mexico, during World War II. Now, that was at a time when the president's executive order resulted in 125,000 American citizens of Japanese descent were sent to internment camps around the country.
Mm-hmm.
Hiroshi, in the city of Gallup, defied the president and refused to comply. So Hiroshi himself was not interred in one of these camps in World War II. The woman that he ultimately married was, in fact, interned in one of the camps. Hiroshi joined the army and in 1945 was a member of the 100th Infantry Battalion, 442nd Infantry Regiment, the most decorated unit, probably any war in history, the all-Japanese-American Nisei unit.
Mm-hmm.
He was on the ship bound for Italy, and he was 2 days out of Italy when the war ended, so he never saw combat in World War II.
Mm-hmm.
But he did return with the 100-442, continuing to serve up until the Korean War, during which time his Medal of Honor was one of only two that I am aware of in history that was a classified award.
I'm looking at that right now on the website, Home of Heroes. Yes.
Yes. His citation ends with him, last thing they had seen. And they didn't know what had happened to him. He was captured. He was held as a POW. During his period of internment, Hiroshi was, we always called him Hiroshi. I've known mm-hmm. Hiroshi since 93. He was one of the first Medal of Honor recipients Pam brought to Pueblo. He figured that when he was repatriated, the army would probably court-martial him because he had lost so many of the men that were in his charge during that horrible battle. And so he thought that he would probably be court-martialed. And when he was repatriated, as he came across a bridge at Panmunjom, there was an MP standing there, and there was a general officer standing there. And the way Hiroshi tells me the story is, as he started to walk across the bridge, an MP stepped out in front of him and looked at him and said, "Are you Corporal Hiroshi Miyamura?" And he said, I kind of gulped to myself, and I thought, okay, here it comes. They're going to slap the handcuffs on me and take me away. He said, I looked around, and I was the only Oriental face in the crowd. Wouldn't do me any good to deny it, so I just looked at him, and I said, yes, I am. And he said, at that point, the general snapped to attention and saluted him and said, congratulations, son, you've been awarded the Medal of Honor.
My goodness. Wow. What a
surprise. So now you know the rest of the story, if I can plagiarize Paul Harvey.
Well, the rest of the story, I'm going to have you. I think we need to get together because we've been playing a Medal of Honor like that pretty much every program. We've recorded so many of them now. But I think it's important to get the rest of the story in there. So maybe I'll be talking to you off the air so we can get the whole thing going on there. So tell me a little bit about the history of the Medal of Honor. I know that you mentioned earlier on that, you know, that some people are, I think it was an interview that I was watching that, you know, many people in the Civil War, evidently that's when it was first starting to be distributed.
Yeah, the Civil War was established during the Civil War, and primarily the Navy Award came first, and I quote here, to promote efficiency in the Navy. It was mm-hmm. an award that was restricted solely to enlisted personnel, and that requirement remained a Navy requirement up until after the 1900s. The Army Medal of Honor was established initially for enlisted persons only. Again, this was kind of a carrot on the end of a stick for enlisted men. They figured officers didn't need a carrot.
Right.
But the Army during the Civil War did change their criterion to allow it to be awarded to officers as well. So it was there was some disdain for it. The American military kind of shied away from medals because they smacked too much of European aristocracy with all the counts and princes and everybody else and their chestfuls of metal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a tradition that continues today. So there was some antipathy towards giving medals, and only of the more than 1,000 medals of honor awarded during the Civil War, only about one-third of them were actually awarded through 1870, or 5 years after the war. And then, little by little, it began to gain prominence. Those who had the Medal of Honor were often asked to lead parades, to speak. They were very involved in the GAR, the Grand Army of the Republic, and the medal started to gain more and more prominence. And as it did so, many veterans of the Civil War started saying, hey, I did such and such, and I never got a medal, and they started applying to the War Department. And so two-thirds of the Medals of Honor for Civil War action were actually awarded from 1870 up until about 1914. Now, there are some who think that Civil War Medals of Honor are in a separate class of their own because they were almost... Well, they say they gave them out like candy, and that is not true. And I caution people against thinking that way. Many of the Civil War citations are very simple. For capturing the flag of such and such Confederate regiment, or gallantry in action was frequently all that it said. But they didn't write a large narrative for the actions. Again, going back to the Home of Heroes, go up there sometime and read the story of William Harvey Kearney, C-A-R-N-E-Y, mm-hmm. who was the first black American to perform an action to receive the Medal of Honor, even though he didn't receive his Medal of Honor for four decades. And he got his Medal of Honor for carrying the flag of his regiment forward into battle in the first battle of his regiment that was featured in the movie Glory. And when you read the story of what that man went through, just to say he picked up the flag of the regiment after two others had been killed, you know, that doesn't sound impressive. Then when you read the full story of what he did, you go, holy cow, this man certainly deserved the Medal of Honor. And so I caution people against looking at the early Medals of Honor and comparing them to the citations for World War II, Vietnam, Korea, because the citations may read simple, but the rest of the story is
I think, again, we go back to that, the rest of the story. This website is so easy to look at, folks. You got to go to homeofheroes.com. I'm looking at Sergeant Kearney's action right now. The 54th Massachusetts, Fort Wagner, South Carolina. Oh, yeah, they all got wiped out, pretty much.
Yes, he ran to the fort with the flag, and mm-hmm. He was the only one that made it to the fort.
Wow.
And he was under fire. He was huddled up against the walls of the fort, and then he saw a group approaching him. And he thought they were his comrades that were attacking the fort. The bullets were flying overhead. And so he waved the flag at them to let them know, here I am. And it was actually a Confederate unit, and they took him under fire. At that point, the average person would have dropped that flag and run like crazy. William Harvey Kearney, on the other hand, quickly wrapped the flag around the staff to protect it and then began running across the beach, back to his lines to save his flag. He was shot in the leg. A bullet pierced his clothing in several places. He had a grazing head wound. As he ran, another soldier saw him stumbling along with the flag and said, here, let me carry that for you. And William Harvey Kearney said, nobody but a member of the 54th Massachusetts shall carry our flag. And if I can set the scene for you with bullets and cannonballs splitting the air everywhere, and William Harvey Kearney sprinting across open beach, because that was Fort Wagner, open beach, across the sand, the bullets hitting the sand around him, and in the distance, his friends, from his unit in their ditches and revetments, screaming and cheering and hoping that he was going to make it, and he stumbled into their lines, badly wounded, and before he collapsed, he handed the flag off and said, "Gentlemen, I only did my duty. Our flag never touched the ground."
That's great. That's a great story, Doug. That's just really cool. I like the concept of that. Let's sticking with the Civil War. Is the Civil War the only one where a woman was awarded the Medal of Honor?
Yes. Dr. Mary Edwards Walker was awarded the Medal of Honor. She was a civilian contract surgeon. She was also a prisoner of war. She operated as a spy. She always wore a green sash signifying that she was a major, even though she was a civilian on the battlefield, and a large hat with an ostrich feather. And Dr. Walker insisted that she wanted to be commissioned as a major, and she kept begging for that commission. President Andrew Johnson did not want to give a woman a commission. At that time, it was against the law for a woman to serve in the military. It was literally against the law. And so as a concession to Dr. Wagner, he awarded her the Medal of Honor instead of giving her a military commission.
Okay.
Now, Dr. Wagner, along with six others who were civilian scouts, a couple of them in Civil War and a couple of them from the Indian Wars, including the famous Buffalo Bill Cody, saw their Medals of Honor revoked in the review of 1917. And they were ordered to return their medals.
Oh.
Dr. Walker refused. And in 1904, they changed the design of the medal, and they had sent all the recipients a new medal, the new Gillespie medal. Mm-hmm. And they were supposed to send their old one back. Most of them didn't want to send the old one back. So she had both her original Medal of Honor and the new Gillespie medal. And you'll see pictures of her wearing both medals and in defiance of her government. She dressed in black, claiming she had been widowed by her government, wore both of those medals in defiance of Congress or her country, and repeatedly went to the halls of Congress to request reinstatement of her medals. And on one of those trips, she fell on the steps and subsequently died. Decades later, under the Carter administration, Dr. Walker's, after the lobbying of many members of her family, Secretary Clifford Clark under Jimmy Carter restored the Medal of Honor to Dr. Mary Edwards Walker. And then a few years later, to even things out, they also restored to the other civilian scouts that had had their medals rescinded.
Oh, okay. Wow. That's a great story, Doug. It's good to have a man who's in a walking encyclopedia as a guest here on Veterans Radio, kind of fill in all the blank spaces that were, you know, that we're just not aware of.
Well, and that's the purpose of the website.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like I said at the beginning, I'm 69 years old. I may have 5 years. I may have 10 years. You know, who knows? I've lived a hard life, so I'm not expecting to live to be 100. But, you know, when I'm gone, if those stories are in my head, they're gone.
Right, absolutely.
That is the value of the Home of Heroes website and the other things that I've been involved in is, the stories are not about me, and so they shouldn't die with me.
No, and I think, you know, our motto here is that we want our own veterans to tell their stories, because otherwise, if they don't tell them, where are they going to go? And, you know, we don't get them from the person's mouth. We're only going to get somebody who's writing it down, and they may get it wrong. And it sounds like you're not getting them wrong, so we appreciate the effort.
Absolutely, and if I forget, send me a message after we get off, because I want to pitch another radio show to you on that very subject.
Okay. All right. we'll work on that. So the Medal of Honor is the highest award for valor in America. What's the number two?
The number two is the Service Crosses, the Distinguished Service Cross, the Navy Cross, the Air Force Cross. And believe it or not, there is a Coast Guard Cross. It was established just a couple decades ago, but it's never been presented to anyone yet.
Were there any Coast Guard Medal of Honor recipients?
There was one Coast Guard Medal of Honor recipient. One Coastie got the Medal of Honor posthumously in World War II. A total of 55 members of the Coast Guard. You know, we often look down our noses at the Coast Guard, you know, real military, whatever. 55 members of the Coast Guard have received Navy Crosses. More than 70 have received Silver Stars, including 17 during the Vietnam War. And their Distinguished Flying Crosses. You read a Distinguished Flying Cross presented in peacetime to a Coastie and compare it to a Distinguished Service Cross awarded for combat in World War II, and you marvel at both of them. So I'm one guy who has great, great respect for the U.S. Coast Guard.
Well, so do I. My dad was in the Coast Guard, and he was involved in the invasions of Iwo Jima and Okinawa, and he thought he was just going to guard the coast.
Yeah.
Big surprise. Okay, so we've got the Distinguished Crosses, Distinguished Service Cross, Army, Navy, and Air Force, and so forth. What comes after that?
After that, then, in terms of Valor Awards, you have the Silver Star. Between the Silver Star and the Service Crosses, you have the Distinguished Service Medals, which are primarily generally awarded to general officers, and they're not for valor, they're for exceptionally distinguished service to the government of the United States. I've taken some heat over the years for including the Distinguished Service Medals in the Hall of Valor, as they are not a Valor Award. I'm quick to point out that if I did not include the Distinguished Service Medals, Dwight D. Eisenhower would not be in the Hall of Valor.
Oh.
He never got a Valor Award. He actually never saw combat.
Right, yes.
You know, and Claire Chennault, the great aviator who went on into China to organize the Flying Tigers. His highest award is a Distinguished Service Medal. So even though it's not a Valor Award, I think it's a considerable award. And then you have the Silver Star, which is the third highest strictly Valor Award.
Okay. I noticed that you were involved with Military Times Hall of Valor as well. Is it correct?
Well, basically, that's my project.
Okay, because I was looking at that earlier today when I was doing a little research, and I saw that they went down to, you know, Valor Awards, they went down to the air medals and everything.
Well, basically, and the Military Times Hall of Valor is basically a one-man project. That's me, but I have great support system. Military Times saved that project for me at a time when I was about to go under. And my concept in divesting myself of the Home of Heroes website was to no longer spread myself too thin. Jim Fassone can run that and do that and do it much better than I can. And then I was, and it leaves me free to focus solely upon continuing my work on building that database. Now, primarily, the Hall of Valor was designed to digitize the citations for all awards above the Bronze Star. I estimate that in history, this is about 350,000 to 400,000 awards above the Bronze Star. And we're talking about 10 levels of awards there. So that's really not a humongous amount. Bronze Stars, there have been about 2.5 million or more awarded in history. That's beyond my capabilities in my lifetime to do that. We do include some Bronze Stars from time to time. We did some achievement medals basically related to various stories that they were running in. You know, we were doing a story in Air Force Times that involved nine guys in a very secret mission that few people knew about in the war on terrorism. They got achievement medals primarily because the mission was so secret they didn't want to give them a higher award that would attract attention.
Right.
And so we included those. But basically, the work is awards above the Bronze Star, which means going vertically in the pyramid of honor. The first level, of course, is the Navy and Marine Corps Medal, Soldier's Medal, Airman's Medal, Coast Guard Medal. Those are Valor Awards presented for heroism in a non-combat situation.
Okay.
Above that, you have the Distinguished Flying Cross. The
right.
Distinguished Flying Cross can be awarded for exceptional service in flight. It doesn't have to be a combat nature, and, you know, it is the highest heroism award, you know, for members of the Coast Guard on the most frequent basis, although the Distinguished Flying Cross can be awarded for valor. Up until recently, only the Air Force awarded the Distinguished Flying Cross with a V device. Now that has become service-wide. Above the Distinguished Flying Cross, you have the Legion of Valor. Again, another award that some people look at and poo-poo and say, oh, well, you know, why should this be in there? Because it's generally awarded to higher ranking, 06 or higher, and not for valor. Well, that's not true. The Navy awards the Legion of Valor, or the Legion of Merit with a V device in some cases.
Okay.
And in fact, during the confusion of World War II, the Navy didn't have a Silver Star until 1942, August 7, 1942, when the day we invaded Guadalcanal, the Navy first began to award Silver Stars, and the Legion of Merit had just been established a year prior, and up until 1945, in fact, the Legion of Merit actually held precedence over the Silver Star in the United States Navy. So it certainly has a role for being in there. So then you have the Legion of Merit, followed by the Silver Star, followed by the Distinguished Service Medals, the Service Crosses, and then the Medal of Honor. And that is the Pyramid of Honor.
Okay. All right. This is fascinating things. We got about 4 minutes left, Doug. We're talking with Doug Sterner here, who founded the website, the Hall of Heroes. He's also worked on and probably gave birth to the Hall of Valor on Military Times. I was looking at the Air Medal because I, as a pilot, I got one of those with a V device, and I didn't know where it stood in the hierarchy of everything.
Well, you sent it to me. I'll put it up there. But, you know, again, yeah. Like the Bronze Stars, Air Medals, there have been...
They gave out a lot of those. They gave out, I mean, I got 23 Oak Leaf clusters or something like that.
Yeah. Well, and I've seen some guys with up to 100.
Yeah.
Up to 100 Air Medals. So, you know, I bit off a job that everybody said couldn't be done, but I figured was achievable in my lifetime, and try not to bite off more than I could chew.
Well, I can understand why you handed off the Hall of Honor of Heroes to Jim. That there's so much work involved, and that's just constantly needing to upgrade and upgrade and upgrade. And I'm sure that you find stories all the time about these interesting people. We got about 3 minutes left. Any other women being thought about for the Medal of Honor?
Not for the Medal of Honor. Two have received Silver Stars in the War on Terrorism. Another received a Distinguished Flying Cross, which she was a helicopter medical aid person. Incredible story. I don't know why she got the Distinguished Flying Cross. She should have got something higher, but... you know, I visited with her, and in fact, she's only about 17 women in history have received Distinguished Flying Crosses, so she's in very rare company.
Yeah, there are. And some of them, especially since women are able to fly in combat now much more often than they did in the past, I've had the privilege of meeting up with a number, at least women helicopter pilots, a couple of them that I know here locally. One is an Apache pilot, and I just think, wow.
Yeah.
You know, I would love to fly the Apache. That would be awesome.
So what do we got? We got 2 minutes left?
We got 2 minutes. Give me a quick 2 minute story.
Okay. All right. November 23, 1984, there was a defector trying to come across the DMZ in Korea. In the process, there was a little bit of fighting going on that involved a young captain who had graduated from the U.S. Military Academy 5 years before and three of his enlisted men. They were awarded the Army Commendation Medal with V-Device. In 2000, those ARCOM Vs were upgraded to the Silver Star. Yes, 4 Silver Stars awarded for action in Korea in 1984.
Wow.
5 years ago, I got an email from a fellow by the name of Mark DeVille. Mr. DeVille said, "My friends told me that I needed to go up and Google myself on your website, and I found my name, and it says I was awarded the Silver Star." I said, "Yes, you were." He had never been told that. Fortunately, the captain was now a major general working in the office of the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Bert Mizuwasha, a friend of mine. And just 4 years ago, all 4 people were reunited in the chairman's office where he received the Silver Star he had been awarded some 12 years earlier and didn't know about for an action 14 years before that. That is the importance of what we are doing with these records.
It is, absolutely. Doug, I want to thank you very much for being on the program. We can hear the little music coming up in the background there. Thanks for being on the program. As I said, this is Hall of Honors and the Hall of Valor. Hey, we got to go, Doug. Thank you very much. Until next week, you are dismissed.